I'm Robert Harrison. I'm a research assistant professor at the biology department at the University of New Mexico and a native New Mexican. I have done research on the species that you see there in the collage, gray foxes, ringtails, bobcats, swift foxes, and I'm working on badgers now. For the kind of research that I do, I get the most information if I can catch the animals, mark them with a radio collar, and release them into the wild. So I do trap, and I use cage-type traps. And I've been interested in methods of trapping and trapping issues for about 20 years now. So I hope that this presentation won't be too dry, but I'm going to give you some basic information about trapping in the United States and trapping in New Mexico in particular, and also my personal experience with trapping. So, why do people trap? There's a lot of reasons. The number one reason in terms of the number of people involved, the number of animals killed, is for money. And we call this commercial trapping. The second reason is to eliminate predators or pests. And we call this control trapping. The third reason, I had a hard time deciding how to label this particular reason. You could call it a hobby, a lifestyle, recreation maybe, a sport. Even the trappers themselves have trouble labeling this particular motivation for trapping. Then there is tradition. A son may trap because his father trapped or in a community. There's also subsistence trapping, which is where the person who traps the animal actually keeps the fur and the meat for his own use. We don't see much of that in New Mexico. It's more common up in Alaska and Canada. And then finally, there are people like myself who trap for the purpose of studying animals. Now, obviously, these categories overlap. People who trap for recreation also sell their pelts. And perhaps the number one place where these categories overlap is between control and commercial. For example, a rancher may wish to get rid of coyotes on his property. So he may allow a trapper to come onto his property and trap. So it's a blend of control and commercial trapping. Now this blending causes no end of rancor in the debate about trapping. So you may find it helpful when you're listening to people talk about trapping if you keep in mind just what kind of trapping it is that you're talking about, because it's not all the same. Okay, I'm going to talk mostly about commercial trapping because that is the most important. Commercial trapping is driven by the prices of furs, of pelts. And here are some recent prices for New Mexico fur bearers. These prices are driven by the fashion market. Furs are primarily a fashion item, and as mentioned earlier, the main markets are in China and Russia. Our New Mexico bobcats don't stay in the state. They leave. But the fashion market is very fickle, very, very fickle. I've seen bobcat prices as high as over $1,000 for one bobcat. Now, that's not one of our New Mexico bobcats, but the prices can vary quite a bit. And these particular prices are somewhat on the low side right now. So fashion demand drives the prices, drives the activities of trappers. Now notice here, I haven't said anything about what's going on in nature. This activity, commercial trapping, is what we call market hunting. It's hunting to provide furs to a market, an international market. It has nothing to do with the conditions in nature. If you have, say, a bad winter, a bad drought, animals may be suffering, many dying. If prices go up, the trappers are going to be out there. And there's very much the potential to over-harvest or overkill populations. And for that reason, we need very good management. And I'm not just making this up. This is what happened to the passenger pigeons. Remember them? They were hunted to extinction for their meat for eastern markets. The same thing almost happened to elk, to bison, to whales. It's happening now to tigers and to various animals in Africa killed for the bushmeat trade. So the potential for damage is pretty high, and there have been episodes in the past where species were nearly wiped out, including beavers and badgers in the 1920s. Not many people realize that badgers were at one time nearly wiped out in the United States. I'd like to throw in here that for my own research, if you look at the grants and contracts that I bring in, or the money that I spend, not only for my own salary, but assistance, equipment, travel, and so forth, each animal that I study is worth to me about $2,000 to $5,000. Far, far more than they're worth, far more alive than dead. Okay, so how many animals are killed in New Mexico each year? Well, we do have some idea. As Wendy mentioned, we don't know exactly for any species except bobcats, but we can make some pretty good estimates. 1986-87 was a year of particularly high prices, particularly high activity by trappers. You can see that the total over all species, and not just the ones there on the screen, but all of them, is almost 50,000 animals in that one particular year. 2009-2010, the total is more like 14,000. Again, lower prices, less activity. On average, since 1980, about 25,000 animals are killed each year in New Mexico by trappers. And that doesn't include activities by wildlife services, roadkills, activities on the Native American reservations, and so forth. So it's a staggering number. And so naturally, one would ask, what is the effect of this? Well, there are numerous effects. I'm going to talk about two categories, economic and ecological. The amount of money in 2009-2010 that trappers received for their furs, I estimate at about $210,000. And again, this is a little bit low compared to historical things. If the prices go up again, that figure will go up. It could also go down. We don't know. But anyway, in comparison to the state economy, it's obviously not a great amount of money. It is, however, quite significant to the individuals that are involved. For individual trappers, the income they get from trapping can be quite significant to them. And as mentioned earlier, 1,000 to 2,000 fur bearer licenses are sold each year, which is income to the state government. Now, so far as ecological effects, now we can't say that trapping has ever caused a major ecosystem collapse in New Mexico. We've never seen that. But we can, the trapping can cause ecosystems to change. Sorry, let me back up here. We do have some indication that some populations may be over-harvested, such as gray foxes in the Gila, and possibly in some years bobcats may have been over-harvested. But we just don't have the data to see that situation clearly. Now there are other species that are affected in this process besides just the fur bearers. Everything in nature is connected. So, for example, if the prices go up, trapping activity will go up, fur bearer populations will go down, the squirrels, mice, so forth, will go up, and the forage for larger animals like deer, elk, so forth, will go down. Squirrels and mice eat a lot of seeds, grass, other vegetation. I'll talk more about that in a minute. Now, if trapping was banned, it would be similar to the situation of prices going down. In that case, trapping activity would go down, fur bearer populations would go up, squirrels, mice, so forth would go down, and forage would go up. The elk and the deer probably like that situation real well. And I'm not just making this up. There's another professor at UNM, James Brown, who's been doing research on the effects of rodents on communities and on each other. And what he's done is he's created these exclosures, plots where he's basically kicked all the rodents out, trapped them and removed them. And what you see in those plots is amazing. There is so much grass, so many flowers, little plants. It's hard to appreciate the effect of these little animals on the landscape. You can see where a bush has been grazed by an elk or a deer, but it's a lot harder to see what mice do. They're actually very important to the landscape. So my point here is that trapping can have effects far beyond the fur bearers. Now, things, and so if things change, other things will change. If prices change, other things will change. Things are changing in New Mexico. Population is growing, the climate is warming. Who knows what's happening with the economy, and who knows what's going to happen with fur prices. If you remember nothing else of what I've said to you tonight, I'd like you to remember that Game and Fish has no plan for managing fur bearers. If we get in a situation where the populations are diminishing, they have no plan for how to deal with that. Other states have plans. They keep much better track of their populations than we do. We don't have to reinvent the wheel to have a plan. And that is one thing we really need. Trapping in New Mexico is pretty much an open season. It's a free-for-all with no limits. Okay, now I'm going to talk a bit about my personal experience with trapping. I use cage-type traps in my trapping, and this is Felix. Felix is a juvenile male bobcat, and I caught Felix 5 times. I don't know if you want to consider Felix a dumb cat for getting caught so many times, or a smart cat for getting 5 free meals and getting away with it. But my point is that I caught Felix 5 times, and even so, he walked away unharmed. That wouldn't have happened in a leg hold trap. The current standards for leg hold traps allow 30% of the animals to suffer a severe injury. And by that, I mean a broken long bone, dislocated shoulder, or the chewed off paw that people have been talking about, which incidentally is fatal within probably 24 hours. So I like the cage traps because the animals don't get injured as easily. Also, if I catch an animal that I don't want, and this happens a lot, I can just open the door and they can walk out. It's very easy. With a leg hold trap, as you saw, they have to choke them down, choke them into unconsciousness before they can release them or use some other method. I actually, at one point in my life, did use leg hold traps, and I encountered that very situation where I wanted to release animals from those traps. And I can tell you that getting a noose over the head of a terrified coyote is not easy. It's quite a rodeo. In every case, I wound up having to dart the animals. In other words, to inject a sedative into them with a hypodermic needle to settle them down enough that I could get those traps off of them. It's quite something. And finally, I use cage-type traps because UNM does not allow their researchers to use leg hold traps. So these are swift foxes. And to conclude, I'd like to say we're lucky to have such animals in New Mexico. We ought to take better care of them. Thank you.
Thank you, Dr. Harrison. Thank you.